Whether you're an established brand or not, you really need to craft and develop your employer value proposition, because it's the scaffolding for all of your storytelling and how you're going to show up in the world to your candidates.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to Mastering Remote, the podcast that gives you expert advice to help you work smarter and manage better remotely. I'm your host, Christine Orchard. In today's episode, I chat with Diane Tate, the Senior Manager of Internal Communications and Employer Branding at Mozilla. We talk about why the employer brand is essential to help you recruit top talent and how you can develop your own employer value propositions to build stronger teams. Let's get started. Diane, it's wonderful to have you with us here today.
Great to be here.
So I want to dig into the story of Mozilla and how you launched the employer branding initiative. But first, can you just tell us what's the difference between an employer brand and the actual company brand itself?
Yeah, absolutely. So the company brand, people have different definitions. A definition I really like is your own experience or impression of a product or a service. So Kleenex gives you a feeling of soft comfort. So you associate certain feelings with an experience of a product or a service, and that's really the corporate brand. For us, it's Firefox. So a lot of people associate Mozilla with Firefox. The employer brand is the experience that employees feel being an employee of the company. So what is it like to work there? What's valuable about working there? Why would I invest my career there? What's the most compelling thing about this company that would make me want to join and invest my future in this company? So it's the value proposition of a place to work as opposed to a product or service.
Why was that important to focus on creating that explicit employer brand now?
A lot of engineers and developers have known us for a long time. We've been super influential and done a lot in the open source world, but we hadn't, as you said, looked at our employer brand intentionally and done the work. And there's a few reasons. I think we kind of coasted on the fact that we had so much love from developers for so long. We didn't, frankly, have the need to, but we're more than a browser now. So that's a big change. We're evolving beyond the browser to build products in virtual reality. We acquired Pocket, and we're doing a lot more around security and privacy. So we have a suite of products now. So we're not just the browser. When you have a strong brand, the world often doesn't catch up. So when they associate your brand with one thing, it's hard to evolve. So we wanted the world, and especially people that are going to work here, to know that we're more than Firefox. We are Firefox, and we're more than Firefox. And there's lots of opportunity there. And we don't want those people that could find a place to contribute and grow here to not even consider us because they just didn't know. So it was really incumbent on us to tell that story of our evolution and all the opportunities that our people have here to work here, well beyond just working on the browser as an engineer. At the time, we were thinking that we were going to launch a suite of subscription services. So we did do some hiring. We had a lot of plans. We were actually going to hire some sales folks. That was also a big push because we had to have our A game up. If we were going to do a hiring surge, we need to put our best foot forward because talent is competitive and time is scarce and time to market is really important. So we had to line up all our ducks in a row to get ready for this big hiring surge. Turns out we actually pivoted. So we're not doing subscription services right away, but the branding work is evergreen. It's something that needs to happen all the time. We're always hiring people. We're always evolving. We're always innovating. So our story needs to be out there so that folks can just really understand what the opportunity is and we can get the folks that we want.
Can we dig into the details of what kind of research you did to actually get at the employer brand, those value propositions? How did you figure out the core story of Mozilla, especially because it is a brand that exists? A lot of companies might be doing this at the beginning, but you're doing this kind of in the middle of Mozilla's life as a brand. So what was that research like?
Yeah, I've been at Mozilla over 9 years. So it's easy to think that I get it. Of course, I know what it's like to work at Mozilla and I know why people would work at Mozilla, but I'm one person and I have my own experience. So we needed to be more systematic about it. So just in researching about employer branding, it became really clear that the core foundation for employer branding is an employer value proposition. And that is true whether you're an established brand or not. You really need to craft and develop your employer value proposition, whether you're a young company or not, because it's the scaffolding for all of your storytelling and how you're going to show up in the world to your candidates. So we worked with an agency that does this work. We love them. They're called Job Portraits. But we talked to a number of agencies, and I can talk about that in a bit. But the exercise of developing an employer value proposition is really an inside out and an outside in exercise. So we talk to our people here saying, why are you here? What's the core reason that you're here? What keeps you here? What keeps you engaged? What's great about working at Mozilla? What would you tell a friend? Why would you recruit someone to work here? And then we went outside at people that we want to come here. And for whatever reason, maybe they rejected an offer or maybe the right profile, but they're working somewhere else. So we talked to them. We showed them our materials. We actually did a full audit of all of our online materials, and we got people's impressions and reactions from that. And then we married the two and said, this is why our people are here. And this is what the people that we want here are looking for. And then we developed some taglines. They're really statements, but they're statements around what our value proposition is. It was kind of like opening up a present. So we did a number of these interviews and did this whole audit online and then did all this analysis and then came up with these themes. And it was like opening up a gift of like, here, this is who you are. It was really interesting. So one tagline was, as a company, Mozilla is driven by a passion to maintain a healthy, open internet that serves all humans. Another one is, as an employer, Mozilla challenges with passion, defaults to open, and centers the human. Those are some principles that we can then go and then take and infuse into all of our storytelling. For example, centering the human, our user research discipline, we go really deep with folks. We look at the core underlying human motivation behind why they might be using our software so that we can really meet their needs as opposed to just push a product out. So that's one example about how our values play out in our work.
Did you ever find it difficult to make sure that the employer brand was aligned with the company brand and there weren't any conflicts or like, okay, we have A sitting on top of B and they just didn't match? Were there any cases where you found that to be challenging?
Yeah. It's really important because you need to be aligned, right? You can't talk on one side and then make products like say you care about the earth and make products that hurt the earth, right? So that's super critical. You have to have integrity in your brand. So for us, because we were evolving beyond the browser, that was a big impetus for us to do the work in the first place. It aligned with where the business was going. It was actually an exercise to support where the business was going because we need new people to help build new things for us. So it was super aligned. And then the actual process itself was we had to work super closely with all different folks. We brought in our PR team, our talent acquisition team, just making sure that everyone's super looped in, our brand team, so that they understood how the two would complement each other and work together. And we continue to work together. So we continue to partner on things.
So was there any challenge? You have all these people coming together. They have different priorities as well. Any challenges to get them on board with these new employer value propositions?
I think it was the fact that we brought folks through the whole process so that when we got to the point where we had these nice value propositions, it wasn't just like this baked thing that we were okay. just expecting them to sign off on, but they were a part of the whole designing the whole exercise. And then we kept folks updated the whole time. So there were no surprises. And I'd say that's probably a good way to work, regardless of what you're doing, but certainly with employer brand.
The more stakeholders you have, you involve them from the beginning so that they're part of the process. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How did you communicate internally and externally once you had this?
Internally, as I said, we were involving folks the whole time. We didn't do a rollout of our brand necessarily like saying, hey, we did an employer branding exercise. But one thing that we did to launch a lot of the storytelling that we did in our channels was we also got an award from Fast Company for best workplaces, which is a culture. It's all about the internal culture of the company. So the timing was great because we were able to launch the new site, our new branding on Twitter and Glassdoor and LinkedIn, along with this story, this award in August 2019. So we kind of used that as the anchor to convey out to the whole company, like we had won this thing, but it was less about, hey, and now we're doing employer branding, right? Like it was more just, we won this thing and we have a new blog, we have a new careers website now. So we use that award as really kind of the anchor for that because I think internally folks don't necessarily care that I'm doing an employer branding exercise, but they do care about their friends and what the website looks like and being able to refer folks to Mozilla.
So externally, was that part of the launch as well? Any other things that you did to communicate this to the wider world?
Yeah, we used that as the anchor and we had a blog post about it. And then we also did a feature story in Fast Company that fleshed out what the award was about. It was talking about something called Facebook Container and how a lot of people at Mozilla did rally around that product. So it was like a lens into how our culture works and how collaborative we are.
Okay, so very PR focused for the actual launch.
Right, because the brand is, it's for us, but it's also for the world.
So now that you have this, it's been about over a year. How do you measure the impact of this? Do you have to measure whether this is working? Do you need to change things, adjust?
Yeah, like any investment, right? You should measure it and you should monitor it. Branding in general is elusive and difficult to measure. You know, if you put up a sign on a freeway, how do you know that someone who signed up for that thing saw your sign? You don't. So there's some inherent flaws in tracking the effectiveness of employer branding, just like there are for branding in general. But my advice to folks is first, just look at the funnel. The real defining thing is your funnel. Recruiting is a funnel exercise and employer branding is the top of the funnel. It's the first impression that folks will get of your company as a potential place to work. Are people applying? Are they even looking at your website? Do you have anything going on? For Mozilla, we actually have a very healthy top of the funnel. So for example, we had a job opening recently and we got 6,000 applications. We had to take it down. So there is awareness out there already. Like you mentioned, we have a strong brand. So it's more like getting people up to speed on like what that brand means now and today. But our opportunity, I think, looking forward, last year was really the table stakes. We hadn't told the story before. We just had to launch the stuff. And now we can refine it. We can focus on, okay, where in the funnel do we need to focus on? And what can we do to optimize that? Some of that may be branding. Some of that may be other operational things in our recruiting process. So I'd say just look at your funnel, know what problem you're trying to solve. For us, we just had to get the story modern and current and out there and accessible for folks. So even if they knew about our brand, they need to know what our brand today meant. And as a place to work, they hadn't known that. So for us, it was really table stakes. Practically though, for us, like metrics that we look at are Glassdoor scores. Again, imperfect, right? They're anonymous. You can't perfectly trace someone. You don't know if someone's review is actually accurate, quote unquote, but those are scores that people look at. So they're important. Candidates will look at those scores. And if you have a low score, it's tough, right? So we look at that. We try to work on that. Obviously retention, right? If you bring folks in, but they're churning out, then you're not delivering on your brand promise. If we're starting to churn, then we got to look at that. Fortunately, we're not, but you know, like we got to look at that. Also just time to hire, things like that. But again, these are like examples of metrics you can use, but also just know that there's noise, right? So like even with time to hire, maybe it's the branding that teed it up so well that it was super quick to hire, but maybe not. Maybe the time to hire got caught in the cracks of the interview process. So you kind of have to be thoughtful about what problem you're trying to solve, what your organization needs. And you can also go overboard on metrics, I think, too.
It's a bit art and science. Yeah, as a marketer, I understand for sure. If you're looking back at the process, I'm just curious, anything you would do differently looking back?
I think a crucial part was finding the right agency. If you don't have the right agency, it could be really tough. It's almost like a therapist. They really have to know your stuff. And so I wouldn't do it differently because we landed on this amazing agency. So I guess just be thoughtful about your agency is more like advice, but what would I do differently? I don't know. I'm pretty happy with how the process turned out. I guess I would just have more resources, right? Like I'd have a social media manager, I'd have a videographer.
Can you tell us how you went about choosing the agency? Because this might be something, especially for startups who've never done this before or young companies, how did you assess whether they were a good fit for you?
We actually had a list of questions. So we partnered with our brand team and did some networking and research on potential agencies. So we did some, but then we created a list of questions that we had and we asked the same list of questions. We treated it like we would treat a candidate, right? So we wanted to compare them fairly to one another. So we asked them all the same set of questions and then the job portraits just really seemed to get us and they seemed to share our values. It was a great match.
Awesome. Okay. So choose the right agency. Take the time to choose the right agency if that's the route you're going. I want to make sure I have time to touch on this. So I'm curious, you know, I've heard you're pretty good at dealing with hundreds of people or even maybe 1,000 people in a meeting. How do you manage that kind of thing? Or, you know, any tips for someone who might be running a huge virtual meeting?
We're always trying to evolve it and make it better. We have a process that we kind of homegrown cooked process, but my manager and I tag teams. So she is in the Slack channel during the live meeting. And by the way, this has not changed that much pre-COVID versus post-COVID. Before COVID, about half of us were remote. So I would be in the room with some of the presenters, and then we'd still have half of our folks watching remotely. Now it's all remote. And frankly, operationally, it's changed very little. So what we do is we take questions in advance through an internal tool, and we take them all the way up until 1 hour before the meeting. And then we share them out with our executives. And if we have talking points or supporting points that are helpful for them, we'll share that with them too during the call. As questions come in, my manager triages through Slack so I can actually listen to the meeting to know if the question's been answered or not already. And then we use a Trello board and we move the questions along the way. So as questions come in, I'll order them and I'm listening for the meeting as to what's happening so that I can know what I'm going to ask next. So I'm listening to the meeting and I'm thinking about what makes sense to ask next based on what's, because some questions don't really flow together, but some do. And so I try to make the questions flow together so folks can kind of stay attentive and stay on topic instead of jerking beyond very disparate topics. So it's pretty intense and folks want their question answered, right? So everyone thinks their question's important, which it is to them. So it's an art of balancing the needs of the large group. What's the most important thing for the whole room to hear at the same time, because we can't always cover everything.
It's like you're trying to weave a story together from these live questions that people are asking, but also you're trying to tell a story that's cohesive while also making sure all the questions are answered just factually. That's quite tough, but I'm sure it takes a lot of practice.
I have a lot of practice now, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So Slack channel while you're doing it and Trello board. So that's an interesting approach. I've never led a meeting that big, but I'll give that a try next time if I have to.
Trello board is key.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so this whole talk has been about storytelling as how you do that internally, externally. So if you could just summarize, why do you think employer branding is something companies should invest in, especially if you are unsure or you have to convince others in your organization, you know, hey, this is something that we really need to do now?
I'd say if you ever want to hire good people, you should do employer branding. I think that most companies want to hire good people. The market for talent, especially in tech, which is our market, is super competitive. So you've got to put your best foot forward. You've got to be authentic and you've got to make the experience of working at your company super accessible. That's why storytelling is so important. Otherwise, candidates are just going to read glossy brochures. And do they still have glossy brochures today? But that's the equivalent is if you're reading a website or a blog, if you're reading it through the company's voice, it's not accessible to candidates. Candidates want to hear from their peers. They want to hear what the real deal is. So that's why storytelling and branding is so important.
Absolutely. So we're going to end this chat with a few rapid fire questions, just a few more personal questions. They end up being a bit more fun and we can get a little bit more into the Diane behind the scenes. Okay. So ready? Got five of these.
All right.
Who's the most interesting person you follow? That could be on Twitter. It could be anywhere.
I am not going to do an employer branding thing. I love social commentary. I love politics. Anand Wrights is awesome. I love him.
Okay. Great suggestion. Do you have any favorite deep work music or musician that you recommend when you're getting into the flow?
It's funny. I am the weird person that loves silence, but I kind of love the playlists that our AV team just started making playlists on Spotify for our internal calls, and they're themed around the month. So for example, last month was Hispanic Heritage Month. And so we have a bunch of really good playlists with Latinx music on them. And then this month is Black History Month in the UK. So we had a really good playlist this morning. So that will be my go-to.
Are these public playlists that we could listen to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll have to check those out. How would we find those?
It should be under Mozilla Spotify.
Okay.
If not, I'll make sure you get it.
I'll link those in the show notes.
Cool.
That'll be awesome. Is there any remote tool or working tool in general that you can't live without?
I call it the Holy Trinity. So in the world of COVID, it's Slack, Zoom, and Google G Suite.
Yeah,
I guess.
That sounds about right. That sounds about right, yes. So what person, they could be living or dead, would you like to have dinner with?
I love that question so much because it was my college application question.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it was a miracle that I got in. But anyway, my freshman year of college, I met somebody named John Bartunek, who later on became a priest. He's one of my best friends from college, but I never ever communicate with him anymore because he is well into the priesthood. But I guess I'd say him. It'd be fun to have lunch with him again.
That's awesome. What was your answer back when you did your college application?
Oh gosh, this is heavy. I said Jesus Christ because he would never have imagined how his life would have played out.
that's a good one. Good one. What book has had the greatest impact on you?
There's a book called The Four Loves, which is amazing. It's not like an overtly religious book, or maybe it is. I don't know. But it's really about love. And it's about four types of human love. It's a great book.
All right. Well, that wraps it up. Thanks so much for taking the time to share with us all about employer branding. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It was great.
Thanks so much for listening to Mastering Remote, a podcast brought to you by ARC. We make it easy for you to hire senior remote developers, pre-vetted and tailor-matched to you. Check us out at arc.dev. If you enjoyed the conversation today, go ahead and subscribe to be the first to know when our newest episodes of Mastering Remote go live. See you next time.